Dear brothers and sisters, masters have been coming from time to time just to guide the child humanity back to God. When they come, they are very good observers. They see that everybody is unhappy. Guru Nanak says, I see all are unhappy. Wherever you cross your sight, you see all are unhappy. Then Swamiji came up. He also says, oh soul, I see you are unhappy. First thing to be considered is when the masters come, they don't look to us from the labels we are carrying on our bodies to show in which school of thought we are joined to know God. They simply address, O man or O soul. Kabir also the same thing, ever since a man is born, I have never seen any man happy. And the Quran, the Mohammedan scripture also say, it is the home of distress. Tulsi Sahib, a great saint, it tells us, all are unhappy, some physically, some want of money, some unaccountably onslaught in the mind. So they all observe like that. The question remains, master come. They go into the matter, what is the cause of their unhappiness? They solve the mystery of life. And they came to the conclusion, it is all due to the fact that we are ignorant of what man is, what you are, what is your connection with your body, and all around. So say, solve this mystery of life, then find out where the shoe pinches, why we are unhappy. So they gave out all masters that they came from. They came from the east or the west, all gave out the same thing. Greek philosophers, they came up and they said, man knows thyself, of course, in their own Greek language. Gnoti theotom. Old Latin philosophers also say the same thing in Latin language. Gnosi tiphon. All Persian philosophers, they say the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know oneself. He says we are man. Man has three aspects. It has got body, it has got intellect, and it is conscious entity. So we have known so much about the man body, about our intellect, or nothing about our own self. We do know about ourselves only that much, what we have read in scriptures. So knowing oneself is the start, basic thing, whereafter we can know God. Because God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, our mind, our intellect. God alone can be known by soul, which is of the same essence as that of God. God is all consciousness. Our soul is a drop of the ocean of all consciousness. So like knows the like. Generally what we see, we know at the level of our feelings are drawing inferences. And both of them are subject to error. Seeing is above all. So it can see that it is purely a matter of self-analysis. By rising above body consciousness, who we are and what we are. We say it is our body, it is our outgoing faculties. We can put off, if I say my spectacle, we can put it off, my watch, we can put it off, my coat, we can put it off. But can you put off our body too? We say it is my body. So masters come up to give us a demonstration of that, really how to rise up body consciousness. So you know the outward expression of the soul is called attention. So our attention is identified with the body, with the outgoing faculties in the outward world, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. So to say, our soul is under the control of mind, mind is the control of the outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are driven like anything by the outside enjoyments. So we are identified with themselves so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. Now you find, it is we who live in the whole body. It is we from which these outgoing faculties take strength to work. But pity is the whole thing topsy-turvy. Horse had to run, take away the carriage, and carriage is put before the horse. This thing, I think you might have noticed in your daily life, when one man is sitting in some absorbed thought, somebody calls you once, twice, thrice, you do not reply, he comes up to you, asks, dear friend, I have called you so many times, why don't you reply? He says, my attention was absorbed somewhere else. So long the attention is not with the ears, ears don't work. Similarly, sometimes you will find that your eyes are open and you are sitting in a very absorbed state. Somebody passes by you and do not understand, do not recognize who has come and who has gone. Newton was solving a mathematical problem by a roadside, and a band passed by him while playing. Later on, another man came up and inquired, Newton, as any band has passed by this place? He said, I don't know. Now you'll find these outgoing faculties take strength from us. Unless our attention is theirs, they don't work. So how to this demonstration can be had, how to know oneself by practical self-analysis at the feet of a master. So they gave us a demonstration, really how to rise above body consciousness. We see for our own selves, then how can we be happy? Because the attention is absorbed all outside. When it is withdrawn from outside, practically, this house is a wonderful house we live in, which has got so many holes, so many apertures, two of the eyes, two of the nostrils, two of the ears, and mouth, and 200. So there are so many holes, doors in the man body, opening outside, but we do not run away out of it. So our body works as long as we are in the body, and we are in the body as long as we are controlled in the body by some power. That power is one that the maker of all creation and controller of all creation and permeating all creation. That very power also keeps us in the body. So when we rise, we above body consciousness, by withdrawing our attention from all outside and from the body below, the demonstration of which is given by Master, adapt in that way, then you know I am not the body. I am not the outgoing faculties. I am not the intellect. He says, these take strength from me. I am the one living the whole body. When you see that, then you can see that power working overhead. So highest aim of a man's body is to know God. Who can know God? We. Who are we? We are conscious entities. When we are analyzed from all outside, outgoing faculties, mind and intellect, rise above it, we see that power is working. So there was an atheist. In his home he had got a very big hall, and that one motto was written, God is nowhere. His child, he was dying, he was at deathbed, he was an atheist. And the child came up, he began to read, G-O-D, God, I-S is, and no W now, H-E-R here, God is now here. And the dying man said, yes, my child, there is some power that is controlling us. So if we know God, we must know ourselves. Because it is the conscious entity, we can know the all consciousness. So there is another way. If you rise to body consciousness, just as a dying man leaves the body, and come to the back of the eyes, when his eyes are upturned, if you know how to rise there while alive, you see that power. So man is the highest in all creation. It is next to God. Angels are asked to bow down before the man body. Even the gods and goddesses, if they like to meet God, know God, they have to take the body of man. So it is the highest in all creation. All Upanishads are the same. When the souls of the rishis return after enjoying the bliss of the higher planes, and they chose the man body to enter, because in man body alone can man know need God and no other. In gods and goddesses are cannot reach him unless they take the man body. So man has got three aspects, as I submitted before. It has got man body, it has got intellect, and it is conscious entity, a draw pollution of all consciousness. So we have made progress, advancement wonderfully, physically too. We know how the physical body can be maintained, how the diseases arise, how those can be set right. They have got so many patches at our command. Oldest is the Ayurvedic, then the Yunani system, then the allopathic, homeopathic, naturopathic, electronic treatments. So many systems are coming. Intellectually, we have also advanced very wonderfully, that is before you. We can hear and see man speaking at a distance, thousands of miles, through radio. What he is speaking and who is speaking through television. We have visited the moon, and we are visiting other planets also. We can go around the world in hours. With all these advancements, we are not happy. That's the reason. So Master tells us, you can be happy if you rise above body consciousness, analyze yourself for mind and outgoing faculties, know yourself, when you know yourself, like knows the like. You will find that power within you, your body. So Guru Nanak gave the same thing. He says all world is unhappy if he knows himself, withdraws himself from all outside and from the body below, then he comes in contact with that controlling power, God into expression power, which is called Naam or word. Only such a soul can get. Because that is the bread of life and water of life. We have given food to the body, we have become physically strong. We have given food to the intellect, we have gone intellectually strong. With all these, we have inventions of bombs, neurotic bombs, hydrogen bombs. The world is afraid. Anytime this war begins, the world will come to an end. But had we known ourselves first, then all these things should have gone, then what would have found? That we are of the same essence as that of God, we are drops of the ocean of all consciousness, as such we are all brothers and sisters in God. So all these atomic powers, this and that, would have gone to help mankind. All this is due to what? Because we have done little or nothing to know ourselves. And moreover, you'll find, after this man body is given to us temporarily, it won't last long. This is the first companion that comes along with us into the world. But when we leave the world, this does not go along with us. So you hold the one man who rises above body consciousness, his angle of vision is changed. You know, Christ did say, it is easy for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man with so much of possession expended in thought, he cannot, no hope for him. So if your angle of vision is changed, you have the right perspective of the right value of these things. If a man of millions or thousands or hundreds are nothing, they leave everything here. To earn money is not a bad thing, but earn it with honest means. Help yourself and help others. Man is one who is of help to others too. Animals only of help to themselves. Look to the face of the animal, it is like that. Facing upwards. If it remains all towardsly, no stages. God is man made face upward. So that what all masters want is that man should prove the true Son of God. We are all brothers and sisters of God. In that case, he needs in the world will happen. Kingdom of God will come to our on earth. We are conscious entities. As man you will find, we are one. Man is born with the same privilege from God. Born the same way, outer construction the same. Two eyes, two hands, two feet, two ears, two nostrils. Inner construction also the same. All have got stomach, lungs, intellect. So as a man, we are one. As soul, we are drops of the ocean of all consciousness. We are all brothers and sisters and are one. As such, we are all brothers and sisters in God, we are all in one. And whom we worship, called by so many names, that is also the same. The archers may be many, but the target is the same. You remain in any social body, in any religion, all pray to God. Oh God, although we have not seen, this is the natural instinct with an each body, you know some power is there. So it is the third aspect about which we know little or nothing. That is why all this happiness and unhappiness due to. Then the masters tell us, look here, your conscious entity. You are God in spirit and you are spirit in man. A spirit is eternal, and why you fear that you will die? So the body whom we worship is the same. This is the angle of being changed like that. So as such you will find the world will be all happy. The world is, this is the first self-evident fact we have taken here. Second self-evident fact is, the world is not our home, nor this body which we are living in. Our true home is the house of our Father. We are conscious entities. Everything goes to its original source, light a candle. The flame will go up, even to upward, even then the flame will go up. But the source of light, sun, is upward. You throw a cloud of earth very high in the heavens, again that will return to earth, because the source is earth below. So our soul is just controlled by these things, and identified and being under the control of mind, which is material, we are always being led to the earthly things. So they tell us, this man body is not your permanent home, not this world. Your real home is above all heavens. It is that place which is the house of our Father. So naturally, those who come to that awakening, their angle of vision is changed. They consider themselves to be just stuck fast in the earth, whereas his true home is above all heaven. So body is the first companion, as I told you, which came along with us when entering the world, whether king or the subject, rich or the poor, learned or the unlearned, all have to leave the body. In the saints, in the incarnation, they took body and left the scene, and we have also to leave the world someday. So it is a wonderful house we live in. This works, as I submitted already, it works only so long as we are body, and we are in the body so long as some power is controlling us in the body. So this is the high time. Man body is the golden opportunity that we have got. Why? Because in this man body only we can know God, and in no other body. All scriptures speak very highly about it, and they tell us that derive the full body as long as you are in the body. Kabir says, keep the body as long as you can. Rishi told, well, keep it at least up to 100 years. Once this is passes out of our hand, we will go where we are attached. If you are attached to the world, naturally you come round and round to the earth. If, while in man body, we know ourselves and have a contact with all consciousness within, naturally we will go after death to the true home of the Father. So all scriptures tell us this is man body in which God is manifested, can be manifested. This is held by very good fortune. It is your turn to meet God. So man's the greatest lies in the fact that he know God. He can know God. If he has not known God, why brag so much, I am the head of all creation? So the highest thing that we have to find is to know God. So body is the true temple of God. in which you live in, in which the light of God is manifest. Outer temples were made out of the man body, bottle of man body. All masters who came, they said, the two masks is the man body. God does not reside in temples made by human hands, but He does live in body, in the house which He has built in the womb of the mother. That's the man body. So outer places of worship, whether they are temples of the Hindus, they are dome-shaped, whether they are mosques, forehead-like shaped, whether they are churches, long, nose-shaped, they are the two symbols of God are kept. And God wanted, I one and wish to be many. There was vibration, and vibration results in two things, light and sound. So God is light, and God is nada. God is the music of the spheres. So these outer temples are made just to let the beginners know that such like guide and such like light and such like sound of God, voice of God is reverberating within your own man body. The body in which you live, that is the true temple of God. Outer temples were only made to let those understand, those are new, what is what. So same light, the same light you have got in the churches, the same light is lit in the temples, the same light is lit in the mosques. So these are only models made, which is the better, best of all. So Master tells us that man body is the best of all in which the light of God is emerging. So I mean the ideal of all religions at our hand is what? A Sikh is he who sees the full effulgence of light within him. He is called a Khalsa. A Hindu is one who, instead of lighting outside, he lights the within, sees the light within. A Mohammedan one who sees the light of God, and a Christian also one who sees the light of God. Ultimate goal is the same. That school is better in which many students come up successful. Which school is better? Which has got high, very grand buildings, very good playing ground, very good dresses of the students. No student passes that gets a higher degree. A watch is there, made of gold, studded with rubies. And it does not give time then. So man body, that religion, that school of thought is the best in which that turns out so many successful students who see the light of God. But who can make us see that light of God? That's the question. Masters always say that light is within you. The body is the temple in which the light of God is effulgent. Why, man, you are going round and round outside. If you want to find him, tap inside. That is what Emerson says. So for that reason, it is the Master's, Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. We are all children of light, enveloped by so many sheets. You know how to take off these sheets, you see the light is already there. So for that reason, that is there, why can't we see? Master says there is light within. The reason is, because in contact with mind and matter, soul is going round and round, because wherever it is attached, it will go there. And further, the law of karma, cause and effect, as you sow, so shall you reap. That goes on in operation. If you sow a good seed, you will reap good fruit. If you sow a bad seed, then the result will be bad.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was the first half of an evening talk given by Master in San Francisco on November 12, 1972. Our reader this morning is Rudy Cascon. Hello, Rudy.
Hello, David.
Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. Today I'll be reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, Chapter 3, Life in Fullness. And Master begins by saying, this earth, the arena of so many struggles and strifes, full of sharp antinomies and contrarieties, presenting as it does a vast panorama of life in its variegated forms and colors, is but a speck in the boundless creation of the great Creator. There is no end to the creation, says Nanak, and there are countless forms of life with varied names, species, and colors, writ on the objective world by the ever-flowing pen of the Creator. With all its seeming imperfections, this world serves a useful purpose in the divine plan. Just like an apparently insignificant cog in the machinery of the great powerhouse, nature, the handiwork of God, is not the least extravagant in its design and plan. This world is a penitentiary, a house of correction, a sort of purgatory, a place of expiation, a training ground where souls get chastened by experience. It is a halfway house between the physical planes and the spiritual realms. The powers that be of the earth are hard taskmasters. Believing still in the ancient Mosaic law of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And here, all kinds of third-degree methods are employed, and hard knocks are administered, rendering less than justice, untempered by compassion and mercy, so that one should take his lesson seriously, and by degrees turn away from the world, the ways of the world, to the way of God. Life on the earth plane, then, is a dreadful thing, dark with horror. And we are the lost children of God in the labyrinthine wilderness of the world. Evolution is in the nature of the living monads and consists in their moving towards their source and becoming one with it, for true happiness lies in fellowship divine. Fellowship with the essence till we shine fully alchemized and free of space. But the tragedy of life on earth is that we do not know what we are, and much less of what we may become. What we are, we do not see, and what we see is our shadow, says Socrates. The inner being in us is so constituted after the fashion of God that it knows no rest until it rests in Him. A truly religious experience, says Plotinus, consists in finding the true home by the soul exiled from heaven. And this experience can be ours if we only know how to unhook the self from the trammels and trappings of the body and the mind. Self-realization and God-realization are the highest objects of mundane existence. Self-realization precedes God-realization. Know thyself has ever been an article of faith with the ancients. First the Greeks and then the Romans, in their turn, laid great stress on nothi sutin and noce tipsum, as they called it respectively, and both of these terms stand for self-knowledge, or knowledge of the self in us. This knowledge, the knowledge of the self, or Atmanjana, of the Hindu rishis, and Khuda Shanasi of the Muslim dervishes comes first. And next comes the realization and experience of the over-self or God. Paramatma, or Rabb al-Alamin. And this is called Khuda Shanasi, or knowledge of God. The process of self-realization, whereby the self can be separated from the mighty maze of mind and matter, begins with introversion, the receding of the attention. The attention is the outward expression of the soul into the world. The self-realization process is an art of inversion of the attention from the world of the senses to the world within and beyond the physical senses, technically called paravidya. Real life or reality is something that is cognized only in a death-like state, a state that intervenes and depends upon conscious withdrawal of the sensory currents from the physical body to the eye focus. Life is an active principle, however removed from the senses and observation. In the workaday world, we are prone to all kinds of lusts, lusts of the flesh, eyes, ears, and other sense organs. And we are being constantly swayed by countless attachments, myriads of aspirations and desires, springing from the diverse longings of the heart, and from the unknown latencies lying hidden in the folds of the mind. All types of likes and dislikes, prides and prejudices, loves and hatreds, and many other things unwittingly keep creeping into our personal consciousness. All these things fritter away our spiritual energy and keep us away from the ultimate goal and purpose of our life, to wit, self-realization. This ignorance of the aim of life is a serious malady with which we are afflicted, and it is the cause of bondage, bondage of the soul to the world, bursting with sin and sorrow. And yet, there is a power within us that resurrects, revives the soul. We have therefore to take a turnabout from this dramatic and hectic activity, and find the still center of our being within the human body, where the all-pervading and all-free power resides. This human body is verily the temple of God, and the Holy Ghost dwells therein. So all this present outer activity has to be reversed and geared back into the opposite direction. This process is termed by Emerson as tapping inside, and as going into the foxhole of the brain, as was once remarked by President Harry Truman. For it was into this foxhole that he repaired when he wanted peace, relaxation from the burden of his high office. The Vedas call it Brahmendra, or the hole through which Brahm can be contacted. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you, St. Matthew says in 7:7. He says significantly enough. It shows that a door within the body leads into the realm beyond, the kingdom of God. And of this inlet it is said, "Straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it," St. Matthew 7:14. To locate this gate and to have an experience of the ingress brings about personal conviction, for nothing becomes real till it is experienced. The intellect is finite, and so is reasoning based upon intellect. Scriptural texts speak of truth, but they do not demonstrate it, much less give an actual contact with truth. Logical knowledge is all inferential and cannot be depended upon with complete certainty. Certitude comes only when the eternal word speaks. The shortest and swiftest and the surest way to plumb truth is through a mortal leap into the unknown, says Henry Bergson, the great philosopher. Perception, intuition, and reasoning just help in understanding the reality to a certain extent at the level of the intellect. But seeing is believing. Seeing within one's own eye, the single eye, as it is called. Of this inlet or ingress, little is known by people at large. Nanak emphatically declares, "The blind find not the door." In order to find the straight gate and the narrow way leading into life, life eternal, the life of the spirit as distinguished from the life of the flesh, we have of necessity to recoil from the present downward and outward expansion, rather in the outgoing faculties of the mind at the seat of the soul, and bring our attention fully behind and between the two eyes. In other words, we have to change the center of our being from the heart center, as at present, to the eye center, the Tisratil Nukita Aiswida, and develop the single eye of which Jesus speaks. "If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light," St. Matthew 6:22. This single or third eye, variously called by the sages as the Shiv Netra, Divya Chukshu, or Chasem Aibatan, provides an ingress into the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. Now a lost realm to most of us. It is here at the eye center that one has to tap within, to knock, and knock hard with fully concentrated and single-minded attention as an undivided individual, in order to find the way in and gain an entry into the astral world. Hence the exhortation, "Now is the time to awaken and lovingly remember the Lord." But how? We have not seen him, and one can not concentrate on and contemplate the formless void as he is. In the same breath comes the sage's counsel as well. Learn of this approach to the absolute from some God-man. And what does the God-man say? "Fix thou attention at the eye focus, the seat of the Lord Shiva, the Shiv Netra, for then everything will follow of itself in due course as you will gain experience of the self in you." The Master tells us the entire world is blindly groping in the dark, chasing the fleeting shadows, which are ever eluding and ever fading away into airy nothings as we draw nigh unto them, while the fountainhead of all bliss and harmony lies untapped within at the eye center, which is the seat of the soul and the body in the waking state. This center, when located, gives an access to and provides a supra-conscious contact with the realms that lie beyond the farthest ken of the human mind. Equipped with the sense organs, our only means of outer knowledge as through them, our only knowledge is through them, but the soul is perfect without the senses, for its action is direct and immediate and not indirect and mediate. depending on our outer age, as knowledge of this world is. Well, after obtaining this contact at the eye focus, one is led step by step to the true home of the Father. This is life in fullness. Thrice blessed is man, for it is given unto him to have the power to traverse the inner regions, both astral and causal, and to go into the beyond, Pabrahm, to reach the region of eternal bliss, Satchkhand, outside the pale of repetitive creation, dissolution, and grand dissolution. But so long as one does not withdraw himself from the outer world and from himself as well, from his body, mind, and intellect, he does not draw any nearer to God. It is only when the outward man perishes, when the human in the body is transhumanized, that the inward man, the spirit, is renewed. And the dizzy heights of the Mount of Transfiguration are gained, and one becomes a living spirit, freed from the body and its impediments, capable then of getting the inner experience of meeting the ancient masters like Moses and Elijah, St. Matthew 17:3, 1:3, or of joining the Lord in the feast of Passover, St. Matthew 26:26-29, St. Mark 14:22-25. It is at this place of inner contact the Lord awaits his disciples. Behold, I, the Christ power, stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and he with me. Revelations to St. John 3:20. All this inner experience that St. John reveals to us, he had when he was transformed in spirit, Revelations 1:10. And he speaks of the coming of the Lord as a thief in the night, in the darkness of the soul, Thessalonians 5:2. Heifetz, a Persian mystic of great repute, also testifies, the Murshid, master, comes in the darkness with a lantern in his hands. The way Godward, Prophet Muhammad, says, is narrower than a hair and sharper than a razor's edge. It is described by Nanak as Kandi Dahar, the sword's edge, and thinner than a hair. One has actually to pass through a death-like experience. In this context, St. Plutarch says, at the moment of death, the soul experiences the same impressions and passes through the same processes as are experienced by those who are initiated into the great mysteries. But how many of us are prepared to experience the death process while living? We are all mortally afraid of death. And why so? When we know, and we know so well, that it is the necessary end of all created things. The reasons, therefore, are not far to seek. In the first place, we have not learned to die at will while living. And secondly, because we do not know what happens after death, where do we go? What lies beyond the death trap? This is why we have a horror of death, and why the mere idea of death holds us in a state of mortal terror. The entire world is mortally afraid of death, and everyone desires to have an endless life. If by the grace of the Guru one learns of death in life, he becomes the knower of divine wisdom. O Nanak, he who dies such a death gains for himself the gift of life eternal. Death, after all, is not a dreadful incident. How charming is divine philosophy! Not harsh and crabbed, as the ignoramuses suppose, but sweetly melodious as Apollo's flute, and a perpetual feast of nectared sweet. Death in reality opens new vistas and new horizons of life beyond the grave and the flames of the funeral pyre that engulf, entomb, and extinguish the mortal remains. But do not touch the soul. Dust thou art, and dust returneth, was not spoken of the soul. The life principle in us, or in fact, in every other living thing, never dies. It is only the elemental parts that go through a process of change, which we erroneously call death, and wrongly understand to be an extinction. In nature, death feeds life, and life illumines death. It is the universal law that operates everywhere and on all planes of existence. The wise men discover that the perception of reality comes with the annihilation of the self, the bodily self in which the soul is incarcerated. The moment the spirit voluntarily breaks through the fetters, something breaks in upon the spirit with a terrible illumination from the world behind the world, making it the prophet of the Most High God. It is at the Mount of Transfiguration, St. Matthew 17:2, that one gets revelations and sees the mingling of heaven and earth. It is here that one finds the dark grows luminous and the void fruitful. For everyone has, as a matter of course, to die someday. Man, bird, beast, rich or poor, healthy or deceased, young or old, the soul which takes on the physical raiment has to shed it one day. Death alone is certain and real, while life in this world is uncertain. We seldom pause to think about the long journey which lies ahead for the inner being in us. We usually lament the death of others and mourn for them for days on end, but are we not wise enough to care for our own end and prepare ourselves for the final journey into the great unknown that lies beyond life's end? Before an analysis is offered of the death process, practical and informative as it may be, it would be worth our while to know at least what we are, who we are, whence do we come, whither do we go, and above all, what is the meaning or purpose of life. Man, as constituted at present, is an aggregate of both body, mind, and intellect, with the great motor power working from behind called soul. Formed and environed as we are through the ages, our attention, the outgoing expression of the soul, is continuously flowing outwards and downwards through the nine portals of the body. The eyes, the ears, the nostril nares, the mouth, and the two passages below the waist. It is not that we wish it or do it voluntarily, but the outgoing of the attention has just become a habit with us. We are not yet masters of the house in which we live. We are being constantly dragged out by the mind and senses through the various sense organs into the vast and varied fields of sense enjoyments. It is this constant association of the self in us, the attention, with the mind and the material objects that has not only debased us, but has defaced us beyond recognition. And now we do not know what we really are. We have become so identified with the limiting adjuncts that we do not know anything independent of and apart from them. Unless the self gets depersonalized, by throwing off the mask of gross personality with which it has covered itself and becomes disrobed self, pure and simple, by disassociation from these countless limiting agents. One, the mind, comprising the faculties of hoarding impressions, chit, thinking, manas, reasoning intellect, buddhi, egoism and self-assertiveness, ahamkar. And two, the coverings, physical, anamai, subtle, pranamai, and manamai, causal, vijayanmai, and anamai. And three, the inborn gunas, the natural propensities of righteousness, and sattva, the mercurial restlessness of rajas, and inaction born of ignorance, tamas. And four, the five elements, the tattvas, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, of which the entire physical creation is made of. And five, the 25 compounded elements, the prakritis, in varying degrees of proportion, which prepare the physical molds or bodies in different shapes and patterns, shades and colors as a result of karmic reactions. The self, imprisoned in so many meshes, cannot know its own real nature, much less its divine ancestry, the rich heritage, all of which comes to light only when it comes to its own and realizes itself as the self-luminous self. Well, let us see what some of the English thinkers have to say in this context. Man is a little world in himself, made cunningly of elements and of angelic spirit. His godlike qualities have been depraved by the fall, and he is constantly visited by divine wrath, wars, plagues, and thunderstorms. Yet he can enjoy a civilized happiness provided he treats the world as a preparation for the next and keeps the body subject to his soul. J. Donne. What is it to trust on mutability, saith that, in this world nothing may endure? John Skelton. There is within the all-comprehending ambit of animal instinct some secret urge which drives the chosen men towards transcending of animal impulse. This transcending animal impulse manifests itself as complete disinterestedness of all that is in the world without. The urge of animal ego is completely disregarded, and the evidence of this regard is a willing submission to a self-sought death, an acceptance of the annihilation of the animal instinct. Is arrayed against this acceptance till nothing remains on the subjective side but pure consciousness, and one is transformed into a superior being whom he imagines or contemplates. Nothing ever becomes real till it is actually experienced. Even a proverb is no proverb till your life has illustrated it. But how many philosophers have made this acquisition? For this, the mind has to be reintegrated, made an undivided whole, as the faculty of sense, integrating which is a prelude to the necessary condition to total detachment from it. The self must be made whole before one can wholly detach oneself from it, body, mind, and intellect. It is the all-seeing mind which embraces the totality of being under the aspect of eternity. And as we gain our entrance into the world of being, a total vision is ours. There is a communication between mystery and mystery, between the unknown soul and the unknown reality. At one particular point in the texture of life, the hidden truth seems to break through the veil. Milton Murray. How, then, is this inner urge to be fulfilled? The process of getting fully into and staying completely in the eye focus, the gateway to the so-called death, is akin to a part of the process of death. The process of withdrawing from the sensory currents from the body below the eyes is a voluntary one, and one comes to experience the mysteries of the beyond into which the master soul, Sant Sadguru, initiates a disciple. During his lifetime, the master soul gives a first-hand inner experience of the conscious contact with the Holy Nam, the divine light, and the holy sound current, the Holy Ghost, see St. Luke 3:16, as coming from the right side, which is the lowest expression of the divinity within. One cannot by one's own unguided and unaided effort have an access into the spirit world when one cannot hold on by himself, even in the physical world, without the active aid and guidance of many teachers from the cradle to the grave. Herein lies the paramount need and importance of the contemporary Satguru or Murshida Kamal, the perfect master, adept in the science of the art of the soul, competent enough to disentangle the spirit currents from every pore of the body and plane of sensation as it is, and raise the soul above body consciousness to witness for it the inner divine splendiferous glory. With the process of withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body, the death-like process commences. You have not to do anything except simply sit in a calm, composed, and fully relaxed position with the attention fixed at the eye focus and engage in simran, or repetition of the charged names, which carry the life impulse of the masters through the ages and serve as passwords to the regions beyond. While so established in an easy posture or asana, in healthy surroundings, you forget yourself, entirely forgetting even the life-giving and life-sustaining puranas, the vital airs, which will of themselves gradually slow down and grow rhythmic, as do the entire respiratory and circulatory system of the body. And here I'd like to end. And thank you. I've been reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, Chapter 3, Life in Fullness. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Master, for your words of inspiration.
Thank you, Rudy, for reading for us. There were 86 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So, what to do then? What he says, live up to that. And you'll find the truth. The truth which is clothed in light. The truth which is the symphonies of the music of all harmonies. Which is the outer aspect of the God-directing power, which is called Word, and Word was made flesh and dwelt among us.